With that, I'd like to introduce a special guest person. Like I mentioned, he is a member of the World Affairs Council, and he's going to formally introduce our speaker. But I'm going to bring up Lieutenant Byron Malott, who took office in December of 2014 as the first nonpartisan administration in Alaska's history. They are also the first Alaskan-born governor and lieutenant governor to serve together. Malott oversees the Alaska Division of Elections and is governor's fisheries advisor, as well as the administration's lead on critical issues such as stewardship and transboundary waters and climate change. His focus on elections includes the landmark settlements of an Alaska Native Language Assistance case and expansion of language outreach to Alaska voters, as well as leading a coalition of Alaskans on issues such as future ballot development delivery options and ensuring robust election security. He co-chairs the Federal Denali Commission and serves on numerous other boards, including the Governor's Opioid Task Force and chair of the Alaska Historical Commission. An Alaska Native and clan leader of the Tlingit Raven Quash Ki Kwan clan, Malott entered public life as mayor of Yakutat at age 22 and has since held many positions of responsibility in the public, private, and nonprofit sectors. He has served every Alaska governor since statehood. He was president of the Alaska Federation of Natives, founding president of the First Alaskan Institute, trustee chair and executive director of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, and chair of the Nature Conservancy of Alaska. Currently, Malott serves as the Polynesian Voyage Society's board of directors. In the private sector, Malott has served as chair, president, and CEO of Sea Alaska Corporation, served on the board of Alaska Air Group, Bank of America subsidiary boards in Washington, Alaska, and is the director of the U.S. Federal Reserve Bank in San Francisco. Malott has also been a small business owner and commercial fisherman. Yakutat remains a lifelong home of the Lieutenant Governor and his wife, Toni, who was born and raised in the Athabascan village of Rampart on the Yukon River. Together, they raised their blended family of five children. The Malott's 10 grandchildren and one great-grandchild lives close by, a true blessing. With that, I'd like to turn over the microphone to our Lieutenant Governor, Byron Malott.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm here on behalf of Governor Walker, which is a really good thing. We kind of do chits with one another, and so this is another one that he owes me, and we will collect. Another thing about our administration is that I have Walter Mitty moments, when I sometimes in the middle of the night will bolt wide awake and say, this is the Malott Walker administration. But mostly, and every single day, we work together to make Alaska better. And when things are going well in the office, it is the Walker-Malott administration. When things aren't going so well, it is the Walker administration. So we have that ability to differentiate. I'd like to acknowledge those who were acknowledged by the previous speaker and the host for this gathering. I'd like also to welcome our special guests. I'd like to now do the introduction of both. Jim Barber has served as president of UPS International since 2013 with responsibility for distribution, forwarding, small package delivery, brokerage, that wasn't.
It's okay, yeah, it's close.
Brokerage, customs compliance, and UPS's other services offerings in more than 220 countries and territories outside the U.S. Jim and his team of 150,000 close friends, 150,000 international employees are currently leading the company's next wave of international investment. Jim has also led UPS's growing investment in emerging markets, including the creation of the ISMEA operating district to capture the opportunities in south-to-south trade in the Indian subcontinent, the Middle East, and Africa. Jim previously served as president of UPS Europe, helping oversee the second wave of international expansion of UPS that began in the mid-1990s. He oversaw several key acquisitions and integrations, including several European healthcare companies and domestic courier, express, and parcel companies in Poland, Turkey, and the UK. Jim joined UPS as a delivery driver in 1985. He later held a series of finance, accounting, and operations management positions in the US, Belgium, and Germany before locating to London in 2006 as managing director of the United Kingdom and Ireland for UPS. He serves as a member of the UPS management team, the management committee, which is responsible for day-to-day management of the company. He holds a degree in finance from Auburn University. Jim is here to talk today about Anchorage, UPS's gateway to the Asia-Pacific region. Please join me in welcoming Jim Barber. I'd like also to introduce Garrett Wong, who is a chartered financial consultant designee of the American College and has over 30 years of experience in financial planning. He maintains securities licenses as well as licenses for life, health, and disability insurance. Garrett is a registered representative of KMS Financial Services. He and his staff provide a full range of fee-based financial planning services with the option of carrying through with implementation of the plan. Garrett's operational philosophy empowers clients to explore and prioritize their goals and make informed decisions to reach those goals. He encourages the team approach to planning, which may involve the services of other professionals, including accountants and attorneys. He's a past member of the Municipality of Anchorage Budget Advisory Commission. He also served as past president of the Anchorage East Rotary Club, Alaska World Affairs Council, Alaska Chapter of Financial Service Professionals, the Anchorage Estate Planning Council, and the Anchorage Downtown Partnership. He earned his BS degree in finance from Santa Clara University and his master's degree in commerce and legal studies from Gonzaga University, both universities that I've had children attend. So that's wonderful. So, thank Garrett you. Wong.
So if I could start, first I'd like to thank Lisa and the World Affairs Council for the invitation today. Lieutenant Governor, appreciate the introduction. It was a bit too long, but sometimes that happens after 32 years. I know we've recognized some of the students. I have a few students at home in my house, so I know what stress you might be under today, so hope you have a good weekend. I guess it's starting at a pretty nice place in a brewery. I guess there's something about this brewery, because yesterday we happened to come in here and watch the Atlanta Falcons play at the brewery, and now we're back with this session today. And I noticed the one beer on my table I had yesterday. It's a very good Alaskan beer too, so congratulations. Before I do get going, there's a number of UPSers in the room. I would ask the UPSers to stand so I could also recognize them and thank them. And if the pilots come on up too, we've got, so here's your UPSers in the room. So to each of you, thanks for what you do for the company, for being in attendance here today as well. And I thought that there's a lot of ways that I could start this off, but probably the most appropriate way would be to show a short video that gives you a view of the beginning couple of minutes here. I'll talk about UPS culture when it's done, but having mentioned in the intro that I did start as a driver 32 years ago, it's the foundation of this company. It really does make us go, and I thought I would bring it a little bit closer to home by showing this video to start out the discussion. Or I think I'm going to show a video. You'll make it.
Nothing else matters other than driving that vehicle and getting it there safely. The weather's a big part of it in Alaska. We get around 80 inches of rain a year here. Rain tends to fog your windows. You're dealing with a lot of wet, you know, water splashing on you. It would be an opportunity, as it were, to lose your focus.
There's landslides, there's avalanches that close the highways.
It'll snow, and then it'll rain, then it'll freeze. You're dealing with a lot of slippery, treacherous conditions, actually.
We stopped operating at the Anchorage Airport for 3 weeks because the volcano blew. We're always one volcano away from disrupting operations.
Ketchikan has a lot of kind of unique conditions besides just the weather here. Quite a large number of tourists that come in every year, and they range anywhere from 800 to maybe 1,600 tourists per boat, and they don't stay to the sidewalks, they don't use crosswalks, so you have to be really aware of that.
One of the things about living in a small town, and there's about 13,000 of us living on this island in the North Pacific here, is that we all get to know each other pretty well. So we all see each other. We all get to know each other. If you're employed, if you don't last long in one place, you'll get a reputation. Tom has a reputation that is, sterling.
Tom is the real deal.
Oh, yeah.
The most important thing for me as a small retailer is being able to have the merchandise here and to have a reliable shipper that can get it to me when they say they're gonna, and it's here.
California, Junction City, California.
Tom is the first Circle of Honor driver in Alaska. It's amazing to see him beam with pride for what he's accomplished over his years, especially living in Alaska, working the conditions he works in. He's doing it in conditions that can go from rain to ice to snow, all within the span of a single day. The phrase in Ketchikan is, if you don't like the weather, wait a couple minutes, it's gonna change. So he's able to drive safely through all those conditions.
It's actually pretty impressive because it's not easy to drive and stay safe all the time, and you have to do that for 25 years to make Circle of Honor.
He's actually encouraged my safe driving. You know, when I drive somewhere and I need to park, I'm backing in now so that when I'm leaving, I'm pulling out. I've found myself adopting a lot of the UPS driving practices within my own driving.
When I learned to fly airplanes, my first instructor was the oldest CFI in Nebraska. And he told me, right before I take off, I say out loud to myself, now I am flying the airplane. And so I would, and it kind of focus you, you know, and I've actually used that when I'm really stressed and we're running late and everything, and I get in that car, I say out loud to myself, now I'm driving the car. And that, just that strange little thing tends to focus me on the true task, which is driving the car. There's only three drivers here in Ketchikan. You don't have other people that can bring in to help you. We have to do it all ourselves in these small centers. And so what we have to do is really pour out the packages. You have to really move a lot of freight. But in the process of doing that, you have to remind yourself to be very safe, because on some of these days, it can be like the worst Christmas you've ever seen because of the weather.
There's a definite relationship between what Tom provides and how effective we can be as an air transportation service. The community of Ketchikan relies on Tom.
It's not a stretch to say that Tom is the face of UPS here in Ketchikan.
All the inductees have a name plaque that they place on the state that they became Circle of Honor of. Alaska was blank. So we took Tom down there, and during the ceremony, Tom took his name plaque and he put it on the state of Alaska.
It was huge to see Tom just beaming from ear to ear, getting to put his magnet on this very bare, barren state of Alaska. And so now, finally, Alaska's got a friend, and it's Tom Ballard.
Nothing else matters other than driving that vehicle and getting it there safely.
So I appreciate that. That is UPS. Talking to Scott, and he made a comment in the video about he's in a small extended center. There's only three of them there, so otherwise he'd be here with us today, but he's here in spirit. But I thought I would start with that. I wanted to talk briefly this morning, and then we'll do some Q&A, I think, given the time frame, about four topics real quick. One would be a little bit more on the culture of UPS and why people like me and my partners that stood up a minute ago tend to spend our whole lives with a company like UPS and why that's important to us. Talk a little bit about Alaska, because obviously a lot of you are invested in Alaska and what you do and what your future will bring. I'll talk to you about why we like Alaska a lot at UPS. We'll talk a little bit about one of these moves in the world today that we'll just label e-commerce and what's that doing to a company like UPS, opportunities and threats. And you know, we're in the middle of right now delivering 750 million packages between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and it's a job, and it's changing very much like many businesses in the world are today, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And then I'll end with trade, a topic that is also changing rapidly with some of our changes in leadership, and we'll talk to you about what we think about that at UPS and how we believe our role to be involved in that really comes down to us as well. So back to the culture. You met Tom. In the intro, it was you know, pointed out that that's what I did to start my career at UPS 32 years ago. I hope my last day I get to do it again, because it is one fantastic job. And what it really I want to leave with you is that we have, you know, four key stakeholders at UPS. Obviously, we have shareholders and we have employees and customers, but communities for us is where it really comes to matter. And you get that in a job like Tom has. As I said, 32 years ago I started. I've moved 25 times across the world. I think I'm on my last relocation now. But I can tell you our culture and what's so important and why we tend to stay so long is that when you connect with communities, you create a bond and a partnership that is very, very strong. And I haven't met Tom or been to Ketchikan yet. Maybe the next trip up. But what they said on that video, they tend to say a lot about our 120,000 drivers across the world the same way. In any country you're in, could be in a different language, no question about that, but that is a differentiator for UPS and why I believe after 110 years, a piece of why we have grown to do that. There are 10 of us on the management committee. I run all the countries, as I said, outside the United States, but every one of us, all 10 of us, including the CEO, started either driving like that or an inside manual position. And we tend to like that a lot, because as we make decisions that impact the four key stakeholders, since you've done the jobs, other than the pilot job, guys, it's hard for us, it's easier to make decisions that we believe will stick for a long time. And so that's a lot of what you do get inside of UPS, and we think it's very important to continue that. Now, when I came up here a couple of days ago on my first trip to Alaska, the question would be why? Why would you come to Alaska on December 6th, for goodness sake? If you're ever going to come in June or July. Well, the irony of it is actually the weather is worse in Atlanta today than it is in Alaska. So there's been a few calls back and forth about how I got it right, maybe. So I did really come to for a couple of reasons, and I'll start with the network piece. And the opening and the slide up here talked about about the connection to the Asia Pacific community here in Alaska. I hadn't been, and we oftentimes, and quite honestly, Alaska tends to get an out of sight, out of mind. And I don't think that's right. I think it's time we get up here and continue to support it in different ways. So we wanted to come up. A couple of us came up. We've got 1,200 UPSers up here. We have 550 pilots that are domiciled up here. We fly something like 110 flights in and out of Anchorage each week. And it is a great connecting point, and I'll talk more about that in a second, to Asia Pacific and to China. And it is a very, very important piece of not just UPS, but I think the whole air industry, obviously, in Anchorage and Alaska means a lot. At least the stats that we look at, there's something like 1 in 10 jobs around here that are tied to this industry. So it certainly is a very important industry. We had a chat with Lisa a few minutes ago about your move as a state from oil and gas to what it will be the next 100 years, and certainly I believe logistics has to be part of that in your future. You have a great connecting point to the world here. That's why we came. We tend to believe we support the community as well, obviously with the jobs, but we also, the landing fees alone that we contribute here are somewhere between $10 and $15 million a year. We'll continue to do that. It's a very business-friendly environment for us to be in Alaska. Your leadership and your tax exemptions that you give us on fuel here as an international carrier, we believe in a lot. So, and we've been here a while in Alaska and in Anchorage, and we really don't have any plans to leave. That's the good news. I believe that as UPS continues to grow, Anchorage and Alaska will also be benefactors. So I think the partnership here has been very good. We continue to invest. We have invested in some new flight simulators and training about 10 years ago. We have celebrated the purchase recently of 14 new 747-8 aircraft, which are the kind of the big ones and the best ones in the industry. They're more effective. They fly more payload. They're more sustainable. I think our pilots like them better, too. So there's 14 of those on the way, and all of those or many of those will flow through here and continue to grow the economy with you here in Anchorage and in Alaska. So it's a unique node for us. I'm gonna shift a little bit though and talk a little bit about this concept of China and e-commerce together for a minute. Typical year, I'll end up in about 30 countries a year. I'll probably fly 500,000 miles a year. But the one that's really top of mind most of the time is China, to be honest with you. If you think about that country and where it is and where it's going to be and how that Beijing regime, if you will, manages that group of 1.4 billion citizens, you tend to realize that of all the models in the world, it's the one that's the most interesting to me. When Beijing speaks, they move. It is an economy that today, their middle class alone is 335 million people, and that's more people than the United States of America. And it is big, and it is growing, and it will continue to grow, and it wants what we have. It wants what Alaska has, too, by the way. They really crave Western products and Western services. There are some issues, if you spend much time in China, on things like intellectual property and protection that we'll manage through in the years to come, but ultimately that swelling of an economy and the purchasing power that they will continue to grow with will probably change the world in the next 20 to 30 years, and I think you're in a really good position to participate in that. Realize today that of the richest cities in the world today, you have, of the 50 richest, 9 are in China. By 2030, 17 will be in China. So if you think the economics aren't there, you need to think again. It is a real move that's coming. And my trip specifically up here the last 2 days was to look at how we at UPS need to support that growth model with our network connected to Anchorage and continue to grow the benefits for everyone. And I'm convinced after 2 days it's there. Our airplanes that fly over here tend to come over absolutely full, and then they go back roughly 25 to 30% full of similar product. And the more we can change that tilt to fly both ways more effectively and efficiently, it will continue to help us invest in Anchorage and Alaska and this entire network. And I'm convinced after 2 days up here with meeting the team and getting a little bit closer to them that it is right around the corner. In fact, in May of next year, we plan to launch a product that puts us in that marketplace. I don't know if the owner or founder of the brewing company, I met him a few minutes ago, and in the first conversation he had, his number one discussion point was how he's gonna connect to the Chinese consumers from this building right here. So I gave him a couple of insights on what's coming, because a certain segment of that 350 million human beings will buy and want what you can give them from right here, and we'll probably ride on our aircraft right back there. And everybody wins in that model. So so to come here for a couple of days and look at that has been great for me. I certainly know it's there. I think the e-commerce platforms of the world, you should obviously, most of you will focus on Amazon. I would encourage you to keep your eye on Alibaba just as much, and JD.com. There are two other platforms that, quite frankly, Alibaba, in my opinion, is better than Amazon, but that's my opinion. But those platforms are changing the world. We had some discussion today about what is the strategy of the state of Alaska. You have a couple of countries in very similar parallels. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is one that grew up on oil and gas, and they are shifting their vision to 2030, much to focus on minerals, not just oil and gas. And then the Emirati countries are very similar. And they're all kind of focused on logistics, and they're focused on ports, and they're focused on things that I know you're talking about, maybe we'll talk about in a minute. But I would encourage you to continue to focus on and recognize those as key assets, and you have many in Alaska. But that is one that perhaps we could continue to focus on together going forward. So, you know, the other thing I think we're gonna talk about in a second probably is trade. The one chance I did get the last couple of days, obviously because some time changes and the setups of what I did the last couple of days, I got to watch a little bit more TV than I normally do, in English actually too, so that was interesting. And I don't know, I'm either gonna be super depressed when I fly back today or opportunistic, but the last couple of days of what's gone on from Washington back is quite startling. You know, part of the decisions that are being made in each country and many countries around the world today are based on this populist movement. We look at that and we recognize at UPS that we've got a job to do. We believe in trade. We believe we have a role to advise the leadership on trade. We believe a lot of good comes from trade, and we don't plan to back up, regardless of what you hear from Washington, regardless of what you hear in London. I mean, it's all over the world, but we believe at UPS, if you stand for what we do in the communities you saw Tom begin, and understand that that's what trade is about, and it creates a lot of good in this world, and it brings societies up. We also are not blind to the fact that some of the trade issues create imbalances in human beings' lives, and we believe a company like UPS has a role to play there as well. As if you do have workers in your industry that might get displaced in the future, that you have a job to do that gracefully. We have an industry like ours that doesn't have a lot of the automation in it that will come in the future, so we'll have actually less employees doing certain jobs in the future. But if we do that right and we look into the future the right way, that we believe we can help them adjust to new roles and responsibilities in the job that may not be at UPS. So it is an interesting world. And it's one that every day we wake up really does change. But I would tell you that on my trip, and as I head out maybe to Atlanta, we'll see if the planes will fly back to Atlanta tonight, that it's been a great couple of days for me to get to know Alaska just a little bit, to be that much prouder of the UPSers here doing the jobs that they do for our customers, to meet Tom on a video anyway, and recognize that there's many Toms in this company, and it's what makes us kind of special and why I've spent my career here. And to know that I think the Alaska Anchorage UPS partnership is one that we will win together. And as you develop your strategies, and World Affairs Council has a role in that as well, with the governor and the lieutenant governor, and that UPS should be part of that. And if you need our help and you need some across the world ideas that might help you out a bit, we'll be glad to be there. And if you need some help in Washington, don't count us out. All right. So I appreciate it very much for the time, and we're going to do some Q&A back and forth. So I'll take whatever questions you would like.
Boy, oh boy, Jim, thank you for your insight. Well, you know, maybe we should pick up on that comment about international trade. I mean, President Trump has clearly stated that, you know, the U.S. and maybe corporate America has gotten the short end of the stick on some of these trade agreements, NAFTA and others. And so the question that is begged is, you know, are we really being treated unfairly in your view as a corporate citizen of the world? And do you think we're on the verge of a trade war of any type?
So I'd say it's 50-50. And it depends who you talk to and what economists you talk to about the unfairness of trade. But certainly a lot of that, you know, I opened with the fact that your air industry here, that airport there is a trade node. A tenth of the human beings here have a job in trade based upon that, in this city, tied to that. So how you balance the books with where the jobs go and move certainly is debatable. It's undebatable that we have lost some jobs in the U.S. There's no question about that. But if you also look at, I believe that what we should not do and what we will, if you will, lobby for is back up and go back to this populist move that everybody retreats to their home turf, and trade is a word from the past. We believe that as a company and as a global set of citizens here, that our job is to refresh it. So when we start talking about NAFTA, which I do believe could use a refresh, largely, by the way, from the Mexican side of the relationship, because the Canadian side's been outstanding for both parties. But when we do that, we should do that respectfully, not throw, if you will, the baby out with the bathwater, and recognize always the advantages of trade, and recognize we're in a unique time. We have Condoleezza Rice is a good friend of ours at UPS, and when the elections were going on and all of this was starting, if you will, you know, her comment and yours a minute ago of the three-legged stool of the checks and balances is, I'm glad we have a three-legged stool, because we may need it going forward in the next couple years, and this too will pass. And we have a job to recognize they're the leaders right now. And you know, some of what's going on, you also have to be fair with a company like UPS, is that our effective tax rate is between 34% and 35%. Now, what's being discussed now is 20, 21, 22. Do the math on a company like ours. It's many, many billions of dollars of something. And I say something because what a company like UPS does with that, we have choices. We can give it to our investors. We could put it back in communities. We could reinvest in public-private partnerships. We could lower our rates. We could do lots of things in the future. And I think that will be something that is yet to be written. I believe the infrastructure in this country needs it big time. Just a little description I've had here of where Alaska is and certainly your ports. I think you guys need it. So reinvestment and creation will change the balance. But it is a 50-50, in my opinion. And I think that if you are one of the citizens that's going to have to continue to change in the future, I believe companies like UPS have a role to help you too.
Well, I appreciate your comment. And let's pivot on that. I mean, you're right. Congress is talking about tax reform and lowering corporate tax rates from down from 35% to 20%. Hey, this is Christmas. If UPS had a Christmas wish list, anything else you'd add to Congress's tax reform?
Golly, that's a big list. Let's get it passed, okay? So my first right, one is let's get that done before Christmas, and then we can have an after-Christmas discussion. But, you know, the other thing that is always kind of in our mind's eye is that trade discussion. We were on the verge of moving TPP. We have movement in the world now coming out of the World Trade Organization called the Trade Facilitation Agreement that is set up in this world for the next 10 years to reduce the friction in the world for trading across borders. Should drop it by 15% at least. That's without the introduction of technology like blockchain or anything else. and that that's ready to go. It's there. It's if you will, in law, and we need to embrace that. And so when we talk, continue to talk more about walls and pulling back on trade, it would be right behind, probably ahead of tax reform, quite frankly. It would be the other wish I would have right now as we get our act together on that. And I understand there's always two sides to every story, and respect has a lot to do with that.
Well, fair enough. We're going to throw you a softball question here. You know, retail sales, as indicated by our Black Friday sales, is looking like it's going to be a good year, mm-hmm. 2017 over 2016. And so we know your package volume is probably ramping up, and you mentioned some outrageous number. How does a company like you keep up with that spike in the seasonal operation like that? I mean, how do you do that?
It's a great question, and what I sit here and think about is I think about your port. And the reason I do that is that in everything that you do in every business or every piece of an economy, you have to ask yourself, when do you adapt, when do you hold, and when do you move forward? And the fact is that those 750 million packages, many of which are in the United States of America, I would have liked to have seen us move quicker to be able to handle that better. And the reason I say that is that, yes, we hire 100,000 new UPSers at Christmas, between Thanksgiving and Christmas. We put 100,000 new UPSers in the fleet. We added 1 million square feet of automated buildings in the U.S. We'll add 5 million more next year. And it takes every breath we have to keep up between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And in my opinion, after 32 years of it, because it's a lot of where you make your hallmark on a brand is doing what you say for customers, we have to keep doing better. Because it is an overwhelming task, and I think we're having to push too hard to make it happen, and I'd like to see more investment in different ways in the years to come to make it a happier time for everybody. How about that?
Well, that sounds great. I mean, I certainly appreciate it showing up at the front door when it's supposed to show up, yep. So I think everybody in here does too. So, you know, you spoke about technology, and, you know, corporate America has really been doing a fabulous job of integrating applied technology to their business models. Maybe you can share with us a couple ideas that UPS has adopted into their global systems that have really enhanced your efficiency. Maybe you can just outline some of the things that you have done that really have made an impression on the company's well-being.
I'll give you one we've done and one that maybe I wake up in the middle of the night and sit up and scream at, which is not here yet, but I think we can see it. I think the one that comes to pass more than most is the introduction of a technology called Orion. It's on-road information analysis network change acronym that allows us to take the packages as they come at our drivers like Tom and optimize the way he will run his route in Ketchikan. And if you don't, and it basically is there to minimize and adapt to dynamically based on the conditions that are being dealt to you, like a Waze app, if you think about that, to reduce the miles that he runs, reduces the fuel, increases sustainability, and reduces cost. For each 1 mile that we reduce a driver's day across the world, we are rewarded with $50 million of profit. On average, the reward has been 9 miles per driver per day. So you can do the math. So that's in place now.
That's amazing.
And it's good for everybody. Everybody wins. And it took us better part of 10 years to develop that proprietary piece of technology. The one that I believe that is very interesting to me is in our logistics business. And I spent some time up at MIT about a year ago with a gentleman named Rick Cohen. And you can Google him. He made his original fortune in the grocery business, believe it or not. And he thought about his business like most everyone is in the world today of getting disrupted. Who's going to come take my business away? Just like we think about it at UPS. And he thought the only thing that could really put him out of place was robotics. And so what he decided to do was build his own robots. And I walked into a building in New York, happened to be an Air Force base I lived at, called Newburgh, up off of in New York by West Point, when Dad was stationed in Vietnam the second time. So I know that Air Force base well. And he has, on average, it was about a 500,000 square foot building that years ago would have had about 600 human beings moving his groceries through the building to get them in and out. He can run that building with four people now, and the robots do the rest. Now, that is coming to every industry in the world. It's a real push. This goes to my point about how do we deal with this gracefully in the world. This fourth industrial revolution is here, and we have to deal with that and be very positive. There's ups and downsides to it, but that one in a logistics industry that really hasn't come yet, it makes me sit up at night. There's a lot of interesting pieces to that that are coming.
Thank you. You know, around the world, as we track performance of portfolios, it's been really noticeable that in the first couple quarters and even through the third quarter of 2017, the global markets, international, emerging markets, the developed markets, are all showing signs of accelerated growth, and unlike in times past. And just wondering, you know, you're already in 220 countries. Is UBS doing any more to capture some of this upside rebound on the global environment?
Absolutely. I could talk for a long time, but I'll make it simple this way, which is having started as a driver like Tom, I believe that you win the hearts and the minds and the souls of the communities that you saw Tom serve by being there on the ground. The fact that we fly 110 flights through Anchorage a week is part of the global network. But if you look at really how you become part of the fabric of a community and economy is to have big ground operations to serve it. I know that because of my career. If you look at the 220 countries in the world that we operate in, I would tell you we have big, strong UPS ground operations in about 10. So if you said to yourself that a strategy would be for the next 100 years, each year to create a new big strong ground network in a country at a time, which is one of our strategies, you could see a pretty bright future for UPS. So maybe 200 years or so, right? So so that's how you get into some of these economies and earn the respect of their leaders and the community, is be part of their growth strategy, be part of their economies, and then they have choices to who they choose to help them. And when they choose UPS first, it works out pretty well.
Thank you. Well, we're going to have one more question, then we're going to open it up for the questions from the audience. But, you know, controversial topic today, climate change, and, you know, just energy efficiency, all these issues that are rising to the surface for corporate America. Maybe share with us some of UPS's philosophies here as climate change becomes more and more of a prominent issue.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So I think it hit me hardest in the UK when I was running the UK, and we had come out of Beijing in 2008, 2012, the Olympics were coming to town, and we bid on that to be the provider to the London Games. We won it, and the first meeting with, if you know, the real famous long-distance runner, Lord now, Sebastian Coe, was the head of the London Olympic committee, and we sat together, and he said, "Look, Jim, glad to have you on board. We want you to run this as a zero carbon emission footprint."
Wow.
And that was effectively 2008, 2009 that it hit me that this world is moving. Quite frankly, I think it's moving faster in Europe than it is in the U.S. And other places. But at that point, you know, I tended to, as an individual, to think about it a bit differently. I then come back to different roles, and I look at a piece of UPS that is our UPS Foundation, and we have sustainability goals and targets that are very aggressive. For instance, we will plant 20 million trees in this world by 2020.
Wow.
We really push our Don't push, they actually do it on their own, is that in our communities to do the work and the sustainability-focused work of that's needed in this world, our employees embrace it. They absolutely do. We are a rolling laboratory in this world. Any type of technology you can think about moving a vehicle down the road, we already have it in place. We will end up to where the emissions of our vehicles including the airplanes, we think we can get there. We think we can actually take as much out that we as we put in, and we believe we have a we have targets for that all the way through 2020. We'll stretch them to 2025, and it goes right back to the opening of that video with Tom, which is if you're part of a community that believes in sustainability, you better get with the program and be part of the solution and not part of the problem. So that's kind of the way we think about it today.
Well, James Marruth, thank you for your formal comments and responses to my questions. Thank you for making the trip from Atlanta.
You are welcome.
And so now, if you would wait for the microphone to reach you, we will entertain some questions from the audience.
Sure.
We have one right here.
Hello. Welcome Hi. To Alaska. Thank you for your inspiring presentation. I have a friend here named Mark, and he's one of your UPS pilots.
Great.
And he informed me that he's glad he'll be retiring within 10 years, because he believes within 20, all of your aircraft will be supersonic unmanned aerial vehicles.
We'll see. The regulators may have something to say about that, but we'll see.
But also, I'd like to know, what's your opinion about node to home and office delivery with drones?
I'll tell you. So I spend a lot more time in Africa today than I ever thought I would. When Bezos came out some years ago and talked about the drone thing that's going to take over the world, I disagreed with him. I still disagree with him. But I absolutely believe that drones in the logistics industry have a place. And I'll give you a quick story. Country of Rwanda has a very progressive president. His name is President Kagame. Among other priorities was the number one cause of preventable death in Rwanda is when a woman gives birth to a child and she bleeds to death because you can't get the blood to her. The country of Rwanda, if you know much about it, the topography is very challenging. The rain seasons come, it exponentially gets worse, and there you have what arguably would be a preventable disease. We went, or set of controllable deaths that you could prevent. We partnered with a company in California that makes drones called Zipline. We went to the president and said, we'd like to help solve the problem. We originally were going to put vaccines into the market, but it's a long story. I won't bore you with that. And he said, good, we're going to do blood. We now, every single day, UPS flies 50 drones, and we cover every point in the country of Rwanda. We deliver blood, and that's about in the past of ever losing your life because you can't get blood after giving birth to a baby. That is an example of where I think they do make sense. I do not think you could sit at home or should sit at home and think about a drone delivering you potato chips. Beer might be different, but that's a whole other thing. So in the right vertical, in the right segment, in the right way that it synergizes with the needs of wherever you are in the world, I think they have a place, and I think the regulators have to hurry up and get with the program to figure out how to make it work the right way.
Other questions? If you have questions, hold your hand up.
Yes, so I thought your point about the freedom of trade was a particularly salient one, and I have been staying up to date on obstacles to that here in the U.S., but what I would really like to learn more about are what barriers to market entry exist in East Asia. Specifically, are there any governments that are pervasive or difficult to work with? And are there any major Asian competitors on par with a company like FedEx?
Ooh, gosh. So Africa is, and if you want East Africa, did you say East Africa? East Asia? Oh, goodness. Let me shift to the world. Look, so the models are very different. Okay, so for instance, Japan's model versus South Korea's model of the chaebols and how you want to enter those markets are radically different. In other words, it really just depends on the governance model, and they're very unique. They all are. So I couldn't give you one or other the other that I would run from more or go into more, but I would tell you the Chinese market is the one I would go to first. Now, the model there, and you talk about, are there other FedExes there? 8 weeks ago, we signed an agreement with a company that is, and this gives you the scale of China. It was formed 15 years ago. as opposed to UPS being formed 110 years ago. In 15 years, Dick Wong, who started driving documents from Hong Kong to southern China and the Guangdong province into Shenzhen, that's what he did as an individual 15 years ago. Today, he has 255,000 employees. The company is called SF Express. We signed a joint venture with them 2 months ago. He has 160,000 touch points in the country of China, and he's 15 years old, and we're partners now. And of all of Asia, I would tell you that model and that company is the most interesting to me. Now the question will be, and like anything else in trade, is can we play in the sandbox together? See, because, right? So we hope so. We think that joint venture was a great step for us, but that market of all of them, although I love Vietnam as well, I think Prime Minister Phuc is doing a great job to connect them to the world, but they're small economies. Just little moves in China are massive. So that one for me is the one I continue to want to spend more time in. Hope that helps a little bit.
So given in particular the importance of global logistics and trade and UPS and what you contribute to Alaska's economy, just want to say thanks for coming up and very glad to have you here.
Thank you.
Actually a couple of questions. One, just kind of piggybacking on that one, how does India fit in all of this? And the other thing is you mentioned it's great when the planes come in full. It'd be great if they could go out full, too.
Yeah.
How can we help?
Yeah, absolutely. Great questions. India. I remember the day that when Obama was elected here in the U.S. and the feel the country had when he was elected. And by the way, who I vote for is, I'm not even bringing it in. My point is that the day he was elected, this country had a feel to it that was very unique in my mind. I was there the day Modi was elected in India, and it was the exact same feeling. That governance model needed reform. I'll keep out his party and what happened before he got into office, but he's a reformer. And I believe that his two key priorities of getting the bad stuff out of the system and getting the infrastructure built, India will be right after China, so they're coming next. And they will make it, in my opinion. We have not really put our good footprint on the ground in India yet. We have a relatively failed joint venture, but we'll fix that. But it's an economy that behind China, I would say it's two. They're 1-2 in my book, and so I think you're on the right path if you're thinking about that. They just passed a GST reform, which was big, in April of this year. And essentially, it makes the whole country flow better. How about that? They're struggling with it just a bit, so their indicators are down just a bit, but it will rebound in 2018 and watch India very closely. How can you help? Gosh, number one, I would say in my opening comments about staying business friendly, that's one, is that, you know, as we talk about reform and you struggle with, as an economy, how you're going to make Alaska work in the future in a world where it is less dependent on oil and gas, much like Saudi has done, much like as the Emiratis have done, that you look at logistics as an ally in this and not as a discrete revenue source to help balance the books, because I believe that trade really has a compounding factor. And I just think you're in a great place and a great node, and just keep that all in focus as you make your decisions going forward as a state. That's my, I guess, number one.
In the interest of time, we have room for a couple more questions, and then we'll have to wrap it up. So, next question.
As an Alaskan, thank you very much for your $10,000 to $15,000 in landing fees. We appreciate it. In the introduction, our Lieutenant Governor Byron Malott mentioned that you had acquired a couple of health insurance companies. Why are you doing that, and what's the difference in providing medical care to your employees in the United States versus other advanced countries like England, which you ran?
Yeah. So let me correct him just a bit. It wasn't health insurance companies we bought. We bought healthcare companies. So what we saw 15 years ago is that in the health care industry, the largely in the U.S., and then we took it overseas, was that obviously our capital model that's heavily based upon on patents and the R&D side of healthcare, many of those patents were coming off, getting ready to come off patent. There was a patent cliff coming in the healthcare industry. What that meant was that the revenue models and the drugs of the past were getting ready to go away. And what was coming was the world of biologics, biosimilars, a whole new set of patents, a whole new set of revenue models in an industry that had never looked at logistics before as a growth driver in their business. And so we said, we're going to get in that business. And so we went and we bought healthcare, what you would call 3PLs. So we don't hold the license or the title to the drugs. We don't do any of that. But what we do is we facilitate the movement of those goods, oftentimes critical to a patient who needs a surgery today, that it's UPS that's putting that product right next to the operating table when it's needed to be there, or drugs that we all see advertised in the U.S. that are thousands and thousands of dollars for one shot of it or whatever that has to have a certain temperature and it can't vary at all. We're in that business now. That's the kind of, that was a choice made 15 years ago. It has expanded into Europe. I was there. I bought six companies in Europe to extend that footprint. And that's, and we are, we're glad we're there. And we will continue to invest in that vertical as well. With respect to health and the insurance of how healthcare companies go for UPSers across the world, radically different by country. I mean, it just depends what country you're in. And I would say the U.S. system of all of them, and of course I won't bring full labor in, but you got, depends if you're a union or a non-union employee working for a company like UPS, where your health care is paid for, who funds it, how it's funded. Some of that could be negotiated, some is just part of the benefits that we provide, but the U.S. model is unique, and I would say that the U.S. model is the best one in the world, even though you could challenge that in different ways. But as far as UPS goes, that's how I would answer that question.
Several times you referred to these opportunities that are here, and one of the things that's been discussed in Anchorage, I think since the 90s, in our kind of first push to have freight come through and be a real player in the game, has been this discussion of how do we become a distribution center? What kind of, we're so close. I mean, it'd be a lot less miles when you start talking about saving miles. What kind of infrastructure, what kind of things do we need to do to engage you and other carriers in us becoming a distribution center?
Sure, great question. Maybe a good one to end on, too, because it may ruffle some feathers, because I guess it's been around in Alaska a while. I see, after 2 days here, the same thing I see in Dubai and the same thing that I see in a country like Saudi Arabia, and that is that they recognize logistics as a big piece of their future. And if you look at what China is doing with the CPEC corridor between China and Pakistan and the One Belt, One Road initiative, it's all to connect this world through logistics, all of it. The days of floating product across oceans, it's radically changing in front of our eyes. And when I asked Scott some questions about how this Anchorage node opens up, every time I got an answer, it was, well, we float some stuff up from Seattle, but it's not too good. How's the port? Well, it needs fixing. How's the road? How's the road working? Well, it needs a little fixing too. And I realize you have to balance that with some of the other crown jewels that you have here of nature and the beautiful opportunity that has in your future. But if you want to get into logistics, it's more about connecting than it is a node, an individual node, because that's where the value starts to come from. So as we talk about NAFTA again now, a company like UPS will be pushing that. How Alaska receives that, how you think about that. There are companies in the world. DP World is the one I think moving the fastest out of Dubai that tends to move their economics around the world and help people that see logistics as an opportunity. They'll come out and invest in the port, help them optimize the port. I don't know the deal they strike to the other side, but they just did it in London, England. We ended up buying the property after they refurbished it. They dug the port deeper, and now we're in a great place in London. So it's about making the node more valuable as opposed to just touching down and going. The more you can do intermodal and connect it to sea, air, rail, road, you got something that's very, very valuable if you're in the right place on the earth. And that's why I would answer your question.
James Barber, thank you so much for your kind words and encouragement about global trade.
Thank you.